It's Living on Earth. I'm Steve Curwood. At the northern end of the archipelago that stretches 1,000 miles down Chile towards Cape Horn is an island the size of Puerto Rico called Chiloé. Chiloé has developed its own mythology and culture thanks to its isolation. Its folklore, quaint town, succulent seafood, and the picturesque ferry crossing have made it a tourism treasure. But some fear the island's isolated mystique may soon be lost. For its 2010 bicentennial, Chile wants to build the longest bridge in Latin America to join Chiloé with the rest of the nation. The government promises faster access to hospitals and easier access for tourists. Yet many islanders claim this bridge isn't really for them, but for a fish, and a foreign fish at that. As part of Worlds of Difference, a series by Homelands Productions, Alan Weissman reports.
Mocito que va remando en tu lancha engalanada, atrácate para el muelle que quiero ver a mi amada.
A ghost is singing.
Siete días que me espera, aquella preciosa flor, el canal no lo cruzaba.
His words tell how he drowned when a storm snatched the boat that was taking him to his wedding. The place where his bride waited in vain is a big green island that hangs like a teardrop off the south coast of Chile, called Chiloé. On Chiloé, hearing ghosts or seeing spirits is accepted, even expected. There's La Pincoya, a long-haired nymph in a seaweed skirt whose dance lures the fish. Or El Trauco, the gnarly forest troll who's to blame when single girls in Chiloé find themselves pregnant. And our unlucky groom is now surely aboard a schooner named El Caleuche.
El Caleuche es un barco fantasma.
The Caleuche is a phantom ship. Its crews are drowned sailors lost at sea. Whenever the fog enshrouds the shore or moves up the rivers, that means El Caleuche is here.
For centuries, the phantom ship Caleuche had no shortage of drowned seamen. Chiloé's original natives, the Mapuche Indians, had only bark canoes to reach their cousins on the mainland, a mile and a half across a windy channel. The sailboats used by settlers sent to this farthest outpost of the Spanish Empire weren't much safer.
We're in the Santa Maria Loreto de Achao Church, the oldest wooden church in Chile.
Chiloé historian Renato Cárdenas is descended from a Spanish sea captain who ran aground here in 1613. Stroking his silky gray goatee, Renato explains that this island was so remote that missionaries couldn't even get nails to build churches.
This church is made with wooden pegs, no nails.
Isolated together, Chiloé Spaniards and Mapuches intermingle bloodlines and beliefs and call themselves Chilotes. In 1958, regular ferry service finally began.
Renato Cárdenas.
Soon, tourists arrived to try to glimpse El Trauco and to see stilt houses and wooden churches built from pegs and interlocking shingles, so charming that they've been recognized by UNESCO.
The churches are now official World Heritage Sites. Chiloé also has more than 30 folk festivals every summer.
Félix Oyasun heads a local development council. He says tourists come for Chilote folklore and music and a cuisine of 200 native potatoes and huge mussels and oysters. But the enchantment, he says, starts with the crossing.
Arriving by ferry is like going through a magic door to an island like none that exists anywhere else in Chile or South America.
Which is why he was stunned to hear about Chile's plan to turn his island into a peninsula. For its bicentennial in 2010, the government wants to build Latin America's longest suspension bridge at a cost of $333 billion. That would turn a 20-minute ferry passage into a 3-minute car trip.
It will be a real shock for the tourists. Chiloé needs an airport, a hospital, roads. It would be a contradiction to have a gorgeous luxury of a bridge to such a deficient place. The government has to come to its senses.
9 ferry boats with 4 diesels apiece run constantly between the mainland and the island. The ferries serve their function, but they just aren't enough. Businessman Sergio Villalobos leads support for the bridge from the town of Ancud. He thinks the sheer volume of traffic a bridge carries would more than make up for the loss of some romantic tourists.
When the Golden Gate was built, they went from 10,000 trips a month to 140,000 vehicles every day.
And all those customers, he adds, will fortify culture, not harm it.
We'll train more people to form folklore groups for the tourist flow, like hula professionals in Hawaii or mariachis in Mexico. That used to be just for fun. Now there are mariachi schools. We need to do that here. Bridges bring progress and new industry.
Ancud could use new industry. This town of 30,000 used to be Chiloé's fishing capital. But cod and sea bass are now so depleted that it's down to one processing plant. Yet when you mention the jobs the bridge might bring to local fishermen, you don't get the expected reply.
It will be worse for us, because traditions will be lost. The magic of the island will be lost. Our mythology will be lost.
Bridges form connections, unite communities. Yet all over this island, emotions run high against one that would link Chiloé to the modern world. One reason, say these fishermen, is the belief that it's not really for Chiloé at all.
It's just to benefit the salmon industry.
In Chile, fishing is fishing, but salmon is an industry. Today, half the salmon U.S. consumers eat comes from here. But 25 years back, there were no salmon in this country.
We are in Curaco de Vélez, an historic place. This is where salmon farming began, not just in Chiloé, but in all Chile.
A lot of us are grateful for farmed salmon. In an age of collapsing sea harvests, groceries and sushi bars everywhere abound with thick orange salmon fillets. Maybe you've heard that Chile is the world's second biggest salmon exporter after Norway. But in these globalized times, that's a little confusing because half the Chilean companies are owned by Norwegians themselves or their European neighbors. In the 1970s, tests showed that isolated Chiloé had some of the clearest water left on the planet. Soon, European salmon growers were floating giant cages of Atlantic salmon transplanted from Norway in lakes and inlets all around this Pacific island. Renato Cardenas talks to a fisheries technician at a new installation on a bay near Castro, the city where he teaches.
We have 280,000 fish, around 40,000 per cage. In 2 months, we'll double.
All those fish, yet only 2 men are working here. Automated feeders deliver pellets made of ground-up sardines, anchovies, and jack mackerel. To keep the salmon coming, Chile has become the world's second biggest producer of fish meal.
A motor pushes food to the cages, so fewer workers are needed, and the salmon grow more uniformly. We monitor by camera to make sure they eat everything, so less food is lost.
Yet many pellets pass right through the cages. Combined with salmon feces on lake bottoms and seafloors, they create enormous algae blooms in Chiloé's once crystalline waters. The same thing happened in Norway, one reason why the Norwegians came here. Chiloé fishermen claim this pollution and aggressive escaped salmon are ruining natural fishing grounds.
The total sales of the year 2002 were $973 million worth of exports.
Rodrigo Infante, general manager of the National Salmon Growers Trade Association, says Chile is on its way to becoming the world's number one salmon producer.
We feel the bridge itself will be a positive thing for the island and its people itself. And
the bridge, he explains, is actually key to a grand plan that goes far beyond Chiloé.
Well, Chile has 55,000 kilometers of coastline and 95% of that to the south. Plenty of areas to be developed.
That southern coastline is a pristine puzzle of islands, fjords, and volcanoes. No road can traverse it, but a bridge to Chiloé would extend the Pan American Highway 100 miles farther, creating a gateway to those untapped regions. Chile's grand vision is fish farms clear down to Tierra del Fuego to triple salmon production. On the eastern shore of Chiloé, Renato Cárdenas and his cousin Pancho gather mussels.
I was born here on the shore. I grew up like algae, like a mollusk. This beach was my playground.
Behind them rises their hamlet's wooden church steeple and hills where teams of oxen plow. In front lie many green islands, and beyond, on the mainland, the snowy peaks of the Chilean Andes, golden in the afternoon light. Just offshore bobs a huge raft of the omnipresent aluminum cages near a line of abandoned styrofoam floats.
That's a salmon farm, and that's the remains of one. They contaminated the bottom so badly, they have to move it.
Where they moved it was right atop rich shellfish beds where Renato's relatives collect. So they've had to work a little harder to fill their 30-kilo sacks with two local mussel varieties, small sweet choros and big meaty cholgas. Inside, three women at a wood stove are grating a heap of yellow and purple potatoes, mixing them with lard and flour, then patting them into rolls. In truth, there have always been bridges to Chiloé, like the satellite dish that brings The Simpsons in Spanish to the TV the kids watch while their mothers cook. Another leads back to a heritage shared across time and ocean with other Pacific Isles, from Easter Island to Polynesia. What they are preparing here would be called luau on Hawaii. On Chiloé, it is curanto. On the hillside above the house, Renato and the men, cousins and neighbors, cut three-foot-wide pangue leaves. They'll cover the loaves of potato bread and the mounds of mussels to seal in the steam from the fire-heated rocks. The cooking hole is the same one they've been using for generations. It took only an hour for the curanto to cook, but the eating lasts twice as long. Silence descends except for the clatter of mussel shells and the passing of wine bottles. Until Pancho's accordion and the guitars come out. Sometime past midnight, the music ends. Renato Cárdenas sits with his cousins on the wooden steps of the house his grandfather built. Directly above hang the Milky Way and the Southern Cross, but they shine fainter than they used to.
There is no night here anymore.
Offshore, the huge platform of floating salmon cages glares under floodlights. About a year ago, someone reasoned that since salmon feed by sight, by adding lights, you could grow them to size in 8 months instead of 12.
The world becomes tangled in sound.
Along with the night, tranquility has also vanished. Since little electricity reaches Chiloé's tiny coastal hamlets, each salmon raft has a droning diesel generator to power its lights. Chilote legends say that Chiloé was formed when an angered sea serpent, Kaikai, made the waters rise, flooding the land. Taking pity, the land serpent, Tenten, lifted the mountains and the islands so people could seek refuge.
About a decade ago, a big storm here destroyed half the salmon cages, masses of free salmon swimming in the open. The people's explanation was that Kaikai was responding to what they are doing to the sea. This was Kaikai's revenge.
It's well known on Chiloé that the center column of the new bridge will rest on a rock that used to be an island until an earthquake in 1960 submerged it. Or maybe that was Kaikai too. The spirits won't let the bridge happen either, says one of Renato's cousins. Renato smiles. Maybe not, he replies. For Living on Earth, on the island of Chiloé, I'm Alan Wiseman reporting.
Our story on Chiloé is part of Worlds of Difference, Homeland's production series, funded in part by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. For pictures and more information on Chiloé, visit our website, livingonearth.org.